Back chat.
Politics and current affairs.
Back chat.
Your alternative to talk back.
Proudly supported by the Judith Nielsen Institute. It's Saturday, September 17th of December. You're listening to Backchat, where we bring you the stories of Sydney and beyond. We're broadcasting from the Gadigal land of the Eora Nation and pay our respects to elders past and present. My name's Tanita Rezaghi and I'm joined by the lovely Eamon Snow. Eamon, what's up?
Good morning. Not a whole lot. Excited to wrap up the year with a bang. It is our last show today of 2022, and we haven't let it slow us down. We're bringing you a pretty big political interview this week. A little later on, you're going to be hearing from none other than New South Wales Labor leader Chris Minns. Next year is bringing with it fresh elections for New South Wales, so listen on if you want to get a feel for the man hoping to topple Dominic Perrottet and the Liberal Party.
Yeah, huge stuff. And a couple of months ago, we reported on issues of culture at private schools after a shocking group of messages between students at Knox Grammar was leaked. Well, Sydney's prestigious Waverley College was in the news again last week for all the wrong reasons, as allegations of brutal bullying and hazing rituals were directed at Year 7 students were made public. We have Dr. Karen Healy joining us to unpack the culture of bullying in Australia, which is becoming somewhat of a rite of passage in schools, and what the mental impact of this behaviour on young boys can be.
Yeah, pretty shocking allegations out of Waverley College, so we will have that one a little bit later on. But first, we're going to be diving into the gender pay gap in Australia with news that it's stagnated in 2022. We're going to be breaking down some of the misconceptions about the issue and more. So if any of that picture is, then please do get in touch. What was your experience at a private school? How did you find the culture? All of that. We want to hear about it. You can text us in on 0409 945 945, or of course, you can tweet us at BackchatFBI.
Backchat, backtalk.
There's always been a misconception when we talk about the gender pay gap. Many people assume that the women are not getting paid the same in weekly in comparison to men in the same industry, but that's not always the case.
Yeah, it's a bit more complicated than that. And with recent statistics that follow the trend of the gender pay gap, we can see that for the first time, it's actually stagnated, with the gap remaining at 22.8%, which is the same as last year. This is accounting for wages increase and inflations in salaries for both men and women.
We're going to chat about this topic further. So we have our lovely producer, Timothy Nguyen, joining us to break down the gender pay gap stats. Tim, thanks so much for joining us.
No, thank you for having me.
So first, just tell us, what is the gender pay gap again? Because, you know, there's so much misconceptions and misinformation about this one.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to to clearly understand it. So I'll just give you a quick breakdown what it is and what it's about, the factors that influence it as well. So the gender pay gap is obviously the measures the difference between the average earnings of women and men in the workplace, and it's an internationally established measure of women's position in the economy compared to men. And the factors that kind of influence this pay gap is discrimination and bias in hiring and pay decisions, women and men working in different industries, women's disproportionate share of unpaid caring and domestic work, and lack of workplace flexibility and stuff like that. So a lot of issues that deal with women being the primary caretakers.
The primary caregiver thing is a big part of this. So could you kind of explain what that looks like for women and why that means that they end up earning less money?
So there's several factors that lead into this. There's obviously where they work, industries they work at, so it can be in construction, obviously it's male dominant, and then nursing and caring industries is also mostly predominantly women. But there's also if they work in private or public sectors, that also contribute to the thing, but also in different states. So we'll start with the states one first. Basically in Western Australia, women, the pay gap's bigger in Western Australia because they have a lot of people that work in the construction and mining industry, which is predominantly male dominant. And so, but in South Australia, the gap is much lower because a lot of women there work in the nursing and caring industries and stuff like that.
Right, so if you're in WA and you're a woman, you're earning way, way less than your male counterparts.
Yeah, just because it's just the different industries that you're working in as well. And also, I think also age is a pretty big factor. I don't think a lot of people will realize, but when you are in your 20s, there was like a trend that I was looking at the statistics that was released mid this year, and the stats show that when you're in your women in their 20s and men and women in their 20s, the gap's only like 2 point something percent, like really insignificant. But it suddenly changes when you hit your 30s, because that's the year when women get pregnant or become like have children and stuff like that. And that increases to like 13.1% in favor of men. So like it increases sharply, and then it kind of increases when you're like 45 to 54, and then it kind of stagnates a bit and then kind of dips. But it's just like this trend that you usually see, the general trend, basically.
So yeah, I guess it's really definitely speaking to like that time that women take off to go on mat leave and how that really affects their income, not just while they're away, but the trajectory as well once they return as well.
Yeah, and we know that there's, I mean, we were chatting about this before the show, Tim, there's definitely this issue of when women are applying for jobs at that age, kind of like late 20s, early 30s, they're often being asked these, you know, inappropriate questions about, you know, are you planning to have children or soon, or do you have kids or that kind of stuff, because they're getting a feel out. So does that kind of stuff then contribute to discrimination in the hiring process?
Oh, definitely. I think because just a lot of big companies, they just, if you're like in a corporate job, let's just say you're in a corporate job, for example, right? And you obviously, a lot of people want to increase their ranks within thing, and if like everyone works hard for it. But like, I think a fact is like when you get a bit older, a lot of people will start to question for like promotion jobs and be like, she might have a child, like, and they'll like kind of be reluctant to do that. So the reluctancy kind of leads people, like for women to get higher promotional jobs less likely because of just like the time they're away from the company, and like companies don't like, obviously they run on like profit and stuff like that. So they obviously will give it to the person that's gonna be not pregnant. So it's like very discriminatory, and like it shouldn't be like this thing that we have now, but it's just like companies are just have always been like that and continue to do it. So we just have to like kind of shift that kind of mindset in the future.
Yeah, there's so many structural issues to that. And we do know that like that kind of 30s period is so critical for when people are elevating up in their industry and that kind of promotion and salary increase and all of that. So Tim, thanks so much for coming in and breaking that one down for us. There's always so much to talk about with it, so I'm sure you'll be hearing us cover this one next year, but it does exist and it is real.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're listening on Backchat on FBI Radio. Don't go anywhere, because up next we'll be joined by psychologist Dr. Karen Healy to talk about the latest private school bullying crisis in Australia.
But right now we have a track from Melbourne artist Billiam. This one is Havana Syndrome. Top tip, I tried to Google this before just to get the more info on the track, and it came up with some crazy conspiracy stuff. So, you know, if you're down for that, Google it. If not, stay away. But we're going to play the song for you right now. You're tuned in to Backchat on FBI 94.5.
Backchat.
Text 0409 945 945.
We're just having some issues getting Dr. Karen Healy on the line, but in the meantime, let's chat about state politics at the moment. State politics over the last couple of years have been interesting, to say at the very least. We've had a huge number of strikes across government industries, ICAC investigations, and premier resignations, and so much more.
Yeah, it has truly had everything in the last few years, and next year we are in for a state election. Things are going to get even more prickly. So earlier in the week, I had a chat with New South Wales Labor leader Chris Minns to hear what he wants to do with the state, how he's addressing some of the big issues, and put to him some of the things that matter to young people. Take a listen.
2023 is just around the corner, and the new year will see New South Wales head to the polls for the state election. Joining me right now is a man vying to end 12 years of Liberal government in our state. It's New South Wales Labor leader Chris Minns. Chris, thank you so much for coming on to Backchat.
You bet. Thanks, Amy. Thanks for having me on.
So I wanted to start with one of your more recent announcements, and one that's pretty important to listeners of FBI. That's mandating a $250 minimum payment for artists that are going to be playing at government-funded events, music events and gigs. Could you briefly explain how that one's going to work?
Yeah, absolutely. So as a condition of receiving any state government funds for any music festival or event, or anything that requires or has somebody bid for state government money, they must pay a $250 minimum fee to every individual musician that performs. And look, the reason we've fundamentally done this is that Queensland and Victoria have similar rules in place. And we want the New South Wales government, in effect, to be a model employer. We want to make sure that we're in a position where young artists in particular don't feel that they have to up and leave New South Wales and move to other jurisdictions to perform. We've got to cultivate and make sure that we're looking after young performers in Sydney in particular. I think that this is a good way of doing it. It's a real no-brainer for us, and it's an initiative that I can't wait to implement if we win.
Another thing we've reported a fair bit on this year in particular is the damage done by pokies and gambling reform. And right now we're in a pretty interesting position in New South Wales where we kind of have this opportunity for bipartisan support for reform. Labor's been unwilling to commit to what the coalition is promising yet, which has, you know, left some people to draw conclusions about clubs in New South Wales and political power. On the face of it, do you believe that we do need significant reform when it comes to pokies and gambling in this state?
Yeah, Eamon, let's just break this down because it's really important, because in some ways the coalition is saying that they're for major reform, but it's no proposal, law, policy change forward by Dominic Perrottet, nothing, not a single. All we have from him is, our direction is for cashless gaming. Now, at the end of the day, I want to make sure that we implement changes and reform to tackle both problem gambling, but as well as illegal and illicit behaviour in the gambling sector in New South Wales. But I just want to get on the record what we've had to deal with over the last 10 years. Under the coalition government, they introduced a second casino into New South Wales. We've seen an independent report indicating massive organised crime involvement in the gambling sector in the state. They've dismantled the Office of Liquor and Gaming and Racing, which was kind of like the cop on the beat for bad behaviour in the gambling sector. And worst of all, problem gambling has doubled in the last 10 years. So as the prospective Premier of New South Wales, I've got to deal with all of these issues all at once. And it's pretty easy for the Premier to say, yep, I want to introduce reform, but nothing has been put on the table, nothing for the community to judge. I want to make sure that we pursue reform. I'm very, very motivated and committed to making changes in order to tackle illicit behaviour in the gambling industry as well as problem gambling, but I want to do it based on evidence.
And one other thing that that Labor's kind of leading with in a recent policy announce is to do with rental relief, which is affecting a whole bunch of young people right now. You're promising to legislate to stop secret bidding, which is basically the process of someone secretly offering $50 more a week to a landlord without the other prospective tenants' knowledge of that. What else? Like, it's a very big problem, the rental thing, and that's just one part of it. It's been suggested things like caps on how much rent can be increased in a single year, things like that. Are they on the cards? Are they being considered to help keep rental prices lower as well?
Yeah, in my view, renters are the big forgotten people in New South Wales. There's about 1 million of them, or just under 1 million renters in the state. One in three home owners or occupiers in New South Wales are renters, and virtually nothing's been done for this group of people over the last 10 years. So there's a few things that we want to do. Firstly, introduce portable bond schemes so that you don't have to keep dipping into your pocket to produce the bond if you swap from one residency to the next. Secondly, we're going to get rid of no grounds evictions so that the landlord must have a reason to kick you out or terminate the lease. Can't just do it on the basis of a whim. And thirdly, and this is really important, we'll end secret bidding in New South Wales. So at the moment, a lot of people are wasting time and effort and energy going around on Saturdays looking for rental accommodation in New South Wales when someone else will come in with a secret bid, an extra $50 or $100 per week to secure the property. Under our proposed changes, you'll have to notify all other tenants if there's been an up bid on that particular house. So you're not incentivized just to front up and provide the landlord or the real estate agent with extra cash. You just have to go through the process of putting in your bid. We think that'll put an end to the arms race when it comes to renters and put some fairness back in the system. And I've got to tell you, Eamon, we're the only political party with a comprehensive plan for this. The Liberals and Nationals have done nothing for 10 years and they're not about to change right now.
One thing that's been super topical recently has been the anti-protest laws introduced by the Perrottet government. They went through with bipartisan support from Labor as well. And we've recently seen one climate protester, Violet Coco, jailed for 15 months, though now released on bail for blocking one lane of the Harbour Bridge for 25 minutes. there's been a lot of condemnation about these laws, and there's been a lot of comparable cases where people who have done much worse things objectively have gotten similar sentences. Is there going to be any room, if you win government, to revisit those laws and those penalties?
There's a statutory review built into that legislation in any event, so that will take place as in relation to those laws. Look, I just made the point in relation to that specific case. It's difficult for me to comment about a case before the courts that's subject to review and subject to judgment by, I think, the district court. But obviously, you'd have to examine the specific previous sentences and criminal history of the person involved, and it's difficult to draw a judgment about specific incident and the judgment that's been applied. Magistrates and judges take into consideration whether their previous edicts and the bail conditions have been adhered to by a person. My problem is when we were facing the climate action protesters, you had a situation where big parts of Sydney and New South Wales were being closed down repeatedly day after day by some protesters. And when I went onto their website to find out, well, how do you negotiate with the group of people that have decided to shut down the city? There were no aims. The specific aim of the organisation was to cause as much disruption to as many people as possible, as many days as possible. Now, I can't have ambulances, paramedics, police officers and firefighters being locked in traffic jams that extend for hours on end and not being able to get to emergency births or terrible car accidents or other parts of Sydney. We need to make sure when you've got a situation where 100 or 200 or half a million people are shut down and locked down and unable to get to work, that we have some kind of response and approach to it. So they were the circumstances. It's difficult for me to commentate about a particular case, particularly one that's before the courts, but they're the circumstances that led to the legislation passing the parliament.
And on that note, I suppose the whole reason that these protests are taking place in the first place was in environmental protection, fears about climate change. We know that this current government has a pretty bad track record when it comes to things like land clearing, species extinction, biodiversity loss, those kind of things. We recently reported on the Cumberland Plain Conservation Plan, which really doesn't look like a very good move in terms of protecting koala species. So what is your plan for the environment if you are to get in? Are we going to see some of these things reversed and you know, some effort put back into preserving environment in our state?
Absolutely. I mean, we were seeing just before the parliament, just before the parliament closed down, the government tried to push through a whole bunch of land clearing laws that would have really reduced the oversight that agencies who have got responsibility for protecting natural conservation were responsible for. Now, this was a particular pet issue from the National Party, and it's a reminder of absent good government and conditions that are in place to help people and in particular help the natural environment. What will happen? We're committed to making sure that we preserve the natural environment. We'll have more to say about national parks and the importance of space in New South Wales in the coming weeks and months as we get closer to the election campaign.
Well, we'll have to keep an eye out for those ones. Chris Minns, thanks so much for coming on to Backchat. There's so much we could talk about, but hopefully we'll get another chance to do this closer to the election.
Anytime, Eamon, just invite me on and I'll be there.
That was New South Wales Labor leader Chris Minns chatting to me yesterday about his plans for New South Wales ahead of next year's state election. That was a shorter version of that interview because we couldn't fit it all in. So if you want to hear the full version, it'll be up on our podcast within the next couple of days.
Yesterday was not my birthday, so you are wrong. My birthday was last month.
Backchat
on
FBI Radio.
Just last month, we talked about the Knox Grammar School leaked group chats that were coined as vile and shocking. It contained messages about child abuse, racism, and offensive commentary. We're seeing bullying and inappropriate behaviour in Sydney's elite private schools become increasingly prevalent, with it almost reaching crisis point.
Yeah, last week, new allegations emerged that almost 16 Year 7 students were beaten with belts, locked in fire hydrant cupboards, made to bark like dogs, and licked the shoes of other students. After investigations were carried out, 6 Year 9 students have now been expelled from Waverley College, and the school has set up psychologist appointments for the students affected.
For more insight into why bullying culture is so prevalent in boys' private schools, we're chatting to psychologist and researcher Dr. Karen Healy. Good morning, Karen, and welcome to Backchat.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
So let's get cracking into it. Just as a psychologist specialising in bullying and conflict, what are your thoughts on this repetitive culture of boys' private school bullying in Australia?
Well, Tanita, I think it's been a long-standing issue, and it's only recently that we're more aware of it, and you know, that we are more aware that it is a problem and can be very damaging for young people until they're adults. So I think, you know, it's quite a good thing that we are aware of it, and our society now thinks that it's not acceptable and we need to do something about it. But I think it's always been here.
Yeah, I don't really recall a time where there's been this much spotlight on it in particular. Could you speak to us about bullying via these rites of passage and hazing ritual type things that we've seen a lot of? Explain that one to us.
Sure. So hazing is like a kind of initiation ceremony, not a ceremony, but an initiation into a group or a school or a college. In the what I've read about Waverley College, which is really only what the media have reported, so I don't have any more information than anyone else on that. I'm not sure whether it was a hazing ritual or not. Certainly it seems to have been, reports suggest it was provoked by the Year 7 boys, so it might be, you know, a serious incident of bullying that lasted over a few days. I'm not sure whether it is something that happens habitually when Year 7 start the school, as would be the case for hazing. But either way, it's really damaging, and, you know, it's good that in some ways that a spotlight has been put on it, because we really need to stop those kind of behaviours, and schools need to take those kind of behaviours seriously.
You're listening to Backchat on FBI Radio 94.5. We're chatting to Dr. Karen Healy about the bullying culture in Sydney's elite private schools. Dr. Healy, how do you suggest that schools and parents deal with bullying incidents that are of this level of extremity?
Okay. Thank you for asking that, Tanita. So I guess, you know, what many schools think and what many parents hope is that it is a quick fix, and that something like that has happened at Waverley, which is a group of students being expelled, will address the problem. Unfortunately, I think that is very unlikely. So we know that bullying happens in all schools and is not a problem that is easily addressed. There is no quick fix. However, schools and parents can really improve the problem if they work at it over time. There's many things that schools can do to address it. So they need to make sure that there is proper monitoring. So, you know, in the case at Waverley College, seemed like it continued for a few days without staff being aware of that. So the school might be asking, well, how is that the case? How is it that no staff member has noticed this happening? How is it that no students have felt comfortable to report? So there needs to be a change in culture over time about students feeling safe to be able to report. They know that they can tell a trusted adult, be that a parent or a teacher or someone else at the school, and that they can trust that that will be handled in a safe way so that it does not come back on them. So it would be unreasonable to expect students to report an issue if it's going to make the situation worse for them, if it's going to come back at them by increased bullying, or if it's not going to be handled in an acceptable way.
Karen,
so these are some of the things that can be done.
Yeah, there's so much to this. No, you're right. We are unfortunately running out of time. Apologies about those technical issues. There is so much to unpack with this, but I really appreciate you coming onto the show and giving your insight into this. It's really, really important at the moment.
Thank you, Eamon.